Thanks again to James Henry Bedell for the wonderful music, and a special thank you to my dad, Manny Crivat, for diddling up a podcast logo based on the Crivat Energy Innovations logo. I'm Lee Crivat, and at the end of January, I had the pleasure of talking with Steve Hauser, the CEO of the Gridwise Alliance. I met Steve in 2009. He's a big guy with a deep voice and extremely knowledgeable, a little intimidating until you get to know him, and then, well, still intimidating. He has spent his career successfully moving the electric grid forward, including being a key driver of the 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act, Title 13 Smart Grid legislation. Steve Hauser, welcome to Climate Champions.
Thank you.
Lee Crivat, you're very welcome. I should say thank you. I'm honored to be able to interview you. And first, I'd like you to talk about what Gridwise Alliance is. You're the CEO.
Correct. So Gridwise Alliance is a nonprofit that we started about 15 years ago. I was working at the time at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, a DOE laboratory. And there were several companies like Sempra and IBM that expressed an interest in finding ways to educate the broader industry around how IT technologies and systems were going to change the electricity industry. And at that time, I mean, if you think back to 2003, we didn't even have iPhones back in those days. So IT was still kind of a nascent concept, even for individuals, right? Like you and I, we didn't have smartphones, we didn't have smart thermostats, we didn't have, you know, all those things were still yet to be uncovered. But we had this sense that IT systems had already started to change other industries and that they were going to change the electricity industry as well. And probably the thing that was talked about most back in those days was smart meters. I'm sorry, smart meters.
I remember them well.
Spaced out there for a second. But, you know, those were starting to be talked about as smart meters, advanced meters, meters that were going to change, you know, a certain part of how utilities interacted with customers. So that was a big part of the thinking back in those days. But there was still this idea that those same kinds of concepts, sensors and IT systems, were going to really change the industry a lot. I had started at the time working with GIS systems and got sort of enamored with that. And even back in those days, GIS was still kind of a new thing for the utility industry. Not very many utilities had really embraced it at the time. So we had ideas about what was going to happen, but we started Gridwise to bring companies together to really try to understand what these changes were going to look like and how they were going to transform the industry. And that was kind of the beginning of Gridwise. We've evolved somewhat over time. Certainly a lot of things have changed in the industry. But generally our concept continues to be this idea that IT systems are going to continue to change this industry, and we want to try to anticipate what those changes are going to be, how they're going to impact the industry, both from a customer interaction standpoint, from a operations, a basic operations of a utility standpoint, but more importantly to this topic of climate change is how they're going to help us integrate clean energy sources like solar and wind and maybe fuel cells in the future.
Can you talk a little bit about PNNL? What'd you do there? How'd you get there?
Sure. So Pacific Northwest Lab is one of the DOE laboratories. Other people might recognize National Renewable Energy Lab or Lawrence Berkeley Lab or Sandia. PNNL is one of those labs. It's been around for decades, right? All the labs have been around since not too long after World War II. And that they're largely funded by the Department of Energy to look at advanced concepts. And I had gone to work there to manage all the energy programs at PNNL. we had a budget of just for my energy programs of about $40 million or so, but we were looking for new things that we could do, right? A lot of the stuff, labs tend to get stuck in a rut, if you will, and kind of do the same things. And PNNL was looking for kind of some new things that they could do. And so we started looking at information technology, sensors, things like that as an opportunity to grow their business in terms of research that DOE would fund them to do. That was really the motivation from the DOE lab side.
You mentioned that the smart meters brought you into the world
right.
of what you can do with technology and how to bring it into the utility world.
Right, right.
And you talked about how that could help with climate change. Was there a moment you remember where you realized that this was important to you?
Well, with regard to climate change, I'm going to go back even a little further because I was at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in the before GridWise, so back in the 90s, before I went to PNNL. And I was in charge of what we called market development or strategic markets for the National Renewable Energy Lab, who does wind and solar and other sort of clean technology developments, right? And I actually have a very vivid memory because I went to a conference up in Aspen that was sort of one of those conferences where, yeah, this looks fun, go to Aspen, right, for a couple of days. I got introduced to a person named Jeremy Leggett, who is one of the fathers of climate change advocacy, if you will. He was working for Greenpeace at the time. He had just come back, you know, this was in 94. He was a year or so from going to the first 92 Rio summit on carbon. And he was then and continues to be one of the intellectual leaders around what he calls the carbon war. He wrote a book called The Carbon War back in the 90s. I got to meet him, introduced. We became fast friends over a beer or whatever, and we stay in touch even today. But he was starting a new solar company at the time and asked me to be on the board. And he told me more about climate change in an hour than I knew anything about it at the time. In the early 90s, it was still kind of a formative concept, right? I mean, there was a lot of work going on around climate change, but it was still a pretty small group of people that were very versed in what was going on. And
that,
so that was Aspen, my introduction.
That Aspen trip was a huge boondoggle that turned into something.
That's exactly right.
Changed your life.
That's exactly
changed
right.
Your life out of a boondoggle.
Yeah.
So why is doing something about climate change personally important to you?
You know, it's probably because of the things I learned back in those days, but I became smart enough, I guess, or educated enough on the impact that climate change was having on our globe back in the early 90s. And I've continued to monitor it, right? I haven't been as immersed in it as a lot of people are, but I continue to monitor it. Jeremy sends out a monthly blog and things, you know, so I kind of try to watch what's going on and what's changed in the world. And and it's clearly, you know, I'm at the age where you are, Lee, right, where it's our kids and grandkids that we think a lot about what's the world going to look like in a decade or two or three or four decades. And it's clear that carbon climate change, the carbon impact, is going to be one of those things that's going to be absolutely pivotal on what our globe looks like in our, you know, the next two or three generations. So
Jeffrey Leggett explained to you in an hour enough to get you motivated about this.
That's right.
I'm going to give you 1 minute.
Okay.
To motivate me.
Well, I mean, I'm not a climate change expert per se, so I can't educate you on those things. You probably know as much as I do, but you watch the programs that, you know, monitor Arctic. I'll tell you one fact that I still remember from what Jeremy told me, because because I was not convinced even when he told me until he said this. And he said, you don't understand that if the Arctic melts, if the polar cap melts and the tundra melts, he said it's all over. There's more carbon in the permafrost, if you will, in the Arctic than anything else in the on the globe. Now, I'm not going to defend that statistic because I don't know the details. I just remember he told me if the Arctic starts to melt, the ice caps start to melt, it's all over. And of course, in the last decade, we've seen that begun to happen in our lifetime, which I think we didn't think was going to happen in
It's happening
lifetime.
So fast
it's
now.
It's happening so fast.
And there's, even as we get our own carbon emissions under control,
right,
we need to figure out a way to deal with the impact we've already made because so much is escaping now.
Absolutely.
How about talking about difficult moments or times you've had following the path that you have?
Yeah. what comes to mind? I mean, you know, you can sort of imagine all sorts of ways to answer that question, right? Because there's certainly difficulties all the time. I think overall, in the last couple of decades, you know, GridWise Alliance tries to work in a policy environment that's largely focused on federal policy, or it has historically been, and increasingly more focused on state policy activities. And, you know, there's been various times over the last couple of decades when we try to work with Congress and try to educate Congress and or the administration. You know, initially it was the Bush administration, then it was Obama, and now it's the Trump administration. And there's times when you just walk away shaking your head that they're never gonna get it. And sometimes you have glimpses of them getting it. And in particular, in the Obama administration, there were people that were more receptive to the message. But certainly in the Bush administration in the early 2000s, and now with the Trump administration, there are people that not only don't get it, but they don't want to get it. And that's probably the most frustrating thing, is like, wait a minute, I'm not arguing something that should be hard to understand.
It can be economically painful to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Change is difficult.
Change is hard, whether it's economics or just personal belief system, right? It's hard to change. Yeah.
Yeah. So I asked you for the hard part.
Yeah.
So now I'll give you a chance to talk about successes. What mm-hmm. successes stand out in your mind?
Well, it's hard not to think about the ESA, the Smart Grid Title 13 work that we did in 2007. It's one of those chances of a lifetime that you can't recreate easily. The late 2006, the election flipped the Senate from Republican to Democrat by one vote. But the Democrats took over the Senate. The Democrats already ran the House in those days. And when the Democrats took over the Senate, Jeff Bingham from New Mexico, Senator from New Mexico, took over as chair of the Energy Committee. And within 2 weeks into January, he said, we're going to do an energy bill. And we're like, oh my God, we're going to actually have a chance to do something, right? And within a month or two, we quickly put together what ended up eventually becoming Smart Grid Title 13 as part of the ESA, E-I-S-A, energy bill in late 2007. Bush signed it, I think, right before Christmas that year. And Title 13 has done as much to change our industry as any single thing, I think, that's happened in the last two decades.
That is a very exciting success to be a part of making it that happen.
Absolutely. And of course, I can remember some of the good things and the bad things that year trying to put that together. It wasn't all roses. It was tough. We ended up getting some things in there that really changed the industry. We ended up having to compromise and take some things out that we still wished we could have done. So,
what about a vision of the future? How do you, when you look ahead 5, 10, you choose the number of years.
Yeah, sure.
What do you think it looks like?
You know, somebody asked me just yesterday about, you know, how fast or how much renewables do we think we're going to really absorb into the grid over the next 10 years, let's say. And that's so hard to, it's so hard to predict, right? Because decisions on what actually gets done is made in so many different places, right? A governor, like in California, or I have a new governor in Colorado where I live, who says we're going to do 100% renewables, right, by 2040 or whatever the number is. But the practical side of getting there is not trivial. It's very difficult.
It's right? nice to have a vision of that. I'm glad they put it out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Great to have a vision.
I would like to find somebody that will let me help them get there.
That's right. Absolutely. But it's just so in the next decade or so, I mean, I think we'll continue to see a lot of changes. A lot of it is driven, again, by technologies that look a lot like our smartphone, right? Or it's things that we have not, or maybe not yet tangibly seen exactly what they look like. You know, it turns out this little hotel I'm staying in, which I won't bore you with the details, but it's brand new. And so, you know, it's a interesting layout. But I walked in the room and there was a Nest thermostat on the wall. I think it's the first hotel room I've ever been in that had a Nest thermostat. But there it is, right? So you know there's starting to be changes like that we're going to continue to see. You know, like, so can you and I sit here and say in 10 years every hotel room will have a Nest thermostat?
I know that won't happen.
That's a big stretch, right? I'm looking at the thermostat on your wall, yes. And it looks like it's 30 years old, right?
Whenever I hear the word every and change together, that's not going to happen.
But it's those kinds of things that I think. And I think the other thing that gives me hope or vision is that I'm going to retire in the next decade sometime. But my kids are taking over. And my kids grew up with a smartphone, right? And a Nest thermostat to them is so obvious. It's like they look at these old dial thermostats from, you know, Honeywell or somebody else that we grew up with, and they're like, those are ancient, right? They're old. Why would we want one of those, right? So there's this generational change, I think, that will drive a lot of the innovation and change that we see in the industry over the next decade that our kids can imagine much faster and easier than we have been able to. So
I do think there is a way to get a large percentage of hotels, for example, to have smart thermostats. And that's, I don't think all of them, the small ones will be laggards.
Right.
But you could see national chains making a deal. It could be with Ecobee. Right. I just wanted to put that in there.
Sure.
Or it could be Nest. Yeah. I don't have a relationship with Ecobee. But the national hotels can do a lot if they get on top of it.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that we're starting to see just in the last couple of years, we go back to the question of renewable penetration, is a lot of the change that's happening is being driven by these national chains, right? Whether it's Walmart or Target or a hotel chain, Hilton or Marriott, they're the ones that are starting to make these very aggressive changes in what they're requiring from their utilities or from their energy management.
The RE100 list is getting bigger and bigger of companies pledging to go 100%. I went to, I don't want to call it a conference, it was Buyers Meet Sellers. Where there were whole bunch of companies looking to get to 100% or looking to get in the game somehow, either by saving money or helping with climate change mitigation. And the speakers were companies that had success already and were offering to help you get there.
Right.
And then there were sellers of renewable energy. At the time, I worked for Semper Renewables. And we were trying to sell battery and solar solutions and get a PPA. We actually had a bunch of land where we had the ability to put solar on, but we needed PPAs.
Right.
So we went there looking for customers, which was the point. But there were so many people there on both sides. I thought it was a beautiful thing.
It is,
So do you have any questions for me?
You know, part of it is, I mean, maybe it's because we're in the political environment we are, which is almost polarizing, if you will, right? Because you've got governors like the new governor in California, the new governor in Colorado, the governor in Hawaii, and probably three or four others that I can't even think of off the top of my head, who are all, who have all made commitments to really move aggressively. In addition, you've got mayors, you know, across the country, right? In Colorado alone, there's four or five major cities that have made 100% commitments to renewables. So you see that happening, but again, it's this practical side of, okay, so what is it that we need to do to kind of connect the vision and commitment to the practical side of changing the grid? In my case, or our case from GridWise, it's what is it we have to change on the grid in order to make those things a reality?
I know that New York City is not going to have just distributed generation and have enough energy, at least not for a long time. A lot of transformational technologies have to be developed before that happens. But I do think that non-dense cities can focus on distributed energy and get to 100%. We put a lot of faith or a lot of power in that number, 100%, because it means every last drop. But I think what's more achievable, and I think it's very achievable, is getting to an 80% number. And from the 80% number, then you can decide on the economics of getting to 100%.
Or even 50%. You know, I mean,
50,
80, 50, 60, 70, 80. I mean,
but I think you can set the technologies today that help get you toward 100 and aren't dead ends at 50. So I think, you know, that I did work for a software company, Price. I don't anymore, but they did have software that I felt could take 100%, even if it might not make sense to put 100% in economically. So I think there's hope. I think we do have to get more distributed to make it happen.
Well, and like we were talking about just a few minutes ago, this idea of companies making that commitment in the much more near term, right? I work some with Fort Collins, and as you know, the mayor of Fort Collins is on our board, right? We're going to see him later today. And Fort Collins has made this 100% commitment in 2035 or whatever the time frame is. But New Belgium Brewery is in Fort Collins. They've already done 100%, right? They made that commitment 20 years ago and have worked tirelessly to get to that. They're already at 100%. So there's a company, or a not a huge company, but it's a major company within Fort Collins that's already doing 100%. The Colorado State University, also in Fort Collins, has also made a commitment to do 100% in a fairly, like in, by 2025 or something, right? So I think there are companies that are located within cities that are going to kind of drive, be first adopters, if you will. And I think you're right. Maybe 70%, 80%, whatever that number is going to be realistically achievable in the time frames we're talking about. And then getting to 100% may be the tail, the long tail, right?
I do think there are ways to get there. The challenge is long-term energy storage. I think we have short-term energy storage, which can manage grid quality. Long-term energy storage is more tricky. I think there are some things out there. You might say I'm crazy. But I think if you say no, you didn't
you're not
hear
crazy.
Me. You didn't hear me yet. I think that if you had a solution, a renewable energy solution that was an order of magnitude even cheaper than it's become, we're in the 20s per megawatt hour.
Sure.
But if we go to where that's under $5 a megawatt hour, we can start making hydrogen with that energy. Right. There's technology I've looked at out of Germany that can make, they use these very small microscopic organisms that if they have electricity, they will eat carbon dioxide and make natural gas out of that. Mm-hmm. There's a company in San Diego, Anaergia. They take mixed waste garbage and they have a way of processing it to extract the organic waste before it goes to landfill, and then they make biogas out of it. So there's a lot of technologies that where we could, if we have energy, you know, we can make long-term storage, in this case, hydrogen and gas.
Right.
So I think there's hope there.
Yep.
Please tell me anything else you want that I have not asked you about.
The only thing that comes to mind, that maybe it's because of what we're doing tomorrow, our board, GridWise Alliance board, is meeting tomorrow to talk about our priorities. And this afternoon we toured the R&D facility at American Electric Power, AEP, here in Columbus. AEP's always been kind of a technology innovator leader. But I think the industry just isn't paying as much attention to innovation and R&D that even than they used to. And I'm always asking myself, so what can GridWise Alliance do to help move this industry forward into this change world, this change environment? And some days I'm very optimistic, and other days I'm very discouraged. It's hard not to get discouraged sometimes, right? I'm not discouraged all the time, fortunately, I suppose. But it's like I want people to understand that we've got to pay attention to this. This is not an optional thing, right? This changing the industry from an industry that, you know, carried the economy for a century, it's got to carry us for another century or more, right? And to do that, there's just a lot of things that have to still change. And that's what gets me up in the morning. I know to some extent that's what gets you up in the morning as well. So
absolutely, I want to help make that change happen very much.
Good.
That's the reason I'm doing this podcast, actually, to get the word out in different ways.
Sure.
I'm going to wrap this up, but I'm going to do it with a rap.
Oh, okay.
He went to Aspen where Leggett talked to him about the science. Now he's CEO of the GridWise Alliance. He had $40 million at the PNNL lab. So he decided to take it and do something fab. He did a lot of technology. You can probably guess, but the one that started him was GIS. He wants to do something to dedicate and help the nation. And he was able to do the energy Title 13 smart grid legislation.
Yay. That was great. Thank you, Lee.
Steve has been a GridWise Alliance leader since helping to form and launch it. It is great to have him leading it as CEO. The grid from 100 years ago, which is largely what we have today, needs significant updating to enable the path to 100% carbon-free electricity and to support the transformation of the transportation industry to clean fuel, two of the biggest factors to mitigate climate change.